Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
When I was a kid, my dad was a cop, and we spent 5 seasons of Loose Units, the podcast, talking through his cases, but the unexplained and the paranormal kept rearing their heads. So this season, we're going to take a look at hauntings, ghost stories, and the crimes behind them, because the story doesn't end when the killing is done. Welcome to Loose Units, the Shadow Files. So back in Sydney in 1841, a guy called Christopher Crawley was born. Now, he married a woman called Elizabeth Carr on the 22nd of September in 1862 in Tumut, New South Wales, and they moved to a town called Junee. But in 1876, they bought some land under the provisions of the Robertson Act of 1861. Christopher Crawley had 2 plots of land, one 400 acres and one 120 acres. Christopher and Elizabeth basically built a primitive slab hut on the land and were really struggling until they got tipped off that the Great Southern Railway line was going to open in 1878. See, the colonial government was going to route the railway through the village of Junee, and there wasn't much there. And so what Christopher did was basically build in that area, take advantage of the increasing trade, and became extremely wealthy. And at that point, he thought the smart thing to do was to build something very special. And what he built was the Monte Cristo Homestead. Now, Monte Cristo means Mount of Christ, and it was only a brick cottage until he basically turned the thing into this amazing mansion. Now, Dad, you and I have been researching this place, and the Monte Cristo homestead is meant to be one of the most haunted sites in Australia. When you look at photos of the place, what are your first impressions?
Great question, Paul. I've had a look at a lot of photographs, and when I first actually studied the photos of Monte Cristo, isn't it weird how you just look at a photo and it just kind of made me feel a bit kind of, well, no, certainly not happy. And then the interior shots, I've been dealing in antiques for a long time. And if I can say this without being sort of, without upsetting probably the current owners, but yes, there are antiques and a lot of them, but it's clever in that the place hasn't moved on in terms of the world of antiques. It's very much of the period. And perhaps that's why, to a lot of people, antiques are losing popularity, because they kind of make you feel a little bit kind of sad in a way. So that's the sort of the initial feeling that I've received prior to actually doing any investigating. And then it's all downhill from here.
Well, you know what's interesting is that basically, yeah, this Junee didn't have much going on at all. So Christopher gets tipped off and becomes incredibly wealthy. One of the things he did, though, is that he donated a bit of land to the church and then helped finance the construction of the church and other town projects. So by the time the economy of Junee is sort of roaring and the railway is going through there, he kind of helped build the town. So I think he had a bit of a... I think there was definitely a bit of kind of esteem. And so the house does sort of look, you know, in the old westerns when you get to the, when they get to that town and there's the kind of rich dude who doesn't really run the town. He's not the mayor or anything, but he sort of has his finger in every pie and everyone knows who he is. And, you know, he's the all the big social events happen up there. And if you look at the homestead, it does draw the eye, basically.
Mm. Oh, and bearing in mind that a lot of people, you know, that was a status symbol.
Yeah.
And it was on a hill, so it had commanding views, mm-hmm. Like a lot of the palaces in Europe. They're in very prominent positions, and it's kind of a it's a it's a two-way street, in my opinion. Psychologically, it's an opportunity for you to look down on the town, which you can take that, you can construe that in many ways, like the upstairs, downstairs scenario, but also the people in the lowlands, the town of Journey, can look up at and perhaps aspire to. But Journey now, which is sort of, it's about 4.5 hours southwest of Sydney.
Yep.
It's near Wagga, and so you sort of hit Wagga, then you sort of drive meandering through the Australian countryside, and you come to the town of Journey, and it is clearly a town that has seen far better times a long time ago.
Yeah,
it's basically in decline, apart from two, or let's actually say three things in that town that do make it worthy of visiting. Of course, there's the Monte Cristo homestead that we're talking about, but the other two things that Journey is actually quite famous for, it has a wonderful licorice factory.
Really?
Oh, mate. Their spelt licorice is top shelf.
Hang on. So, wait, it's a functional licorice factory, so...
Oh, mate, it's world class.
So 33% of the things that bring people there are ghosts. 33% is licorice. What's the other 33%?
A jail.
A functioning jail or
a real jail.
Not like a ye olde jail, an actual jail.
Nah, mate. This is a proper jail.
Oh shit, okay.
And that of course creates employment.
Mm.
And the old sort of railway, you know, hoardings and all the outbuildings, that is where the licorice factory is now. So it's kind of sort of it's a destination.
Yeah.
I don't know a lot about, you know, the town insofar as whether it's still a functioning town or whether most of the people do actually still live in Wagga. But I can't believe I've been to Journey. Christine and I have been there a few times, but we just went there for the licorice. And I did not know about Monte Cristo. And then a couple of our fans, Paul, that work at an auction house in Sydney, sort of approached me and have been talking about this particular place for a long time, almost ad nauseum, saying, oh, when are you going to do something on Monte Cristo? And I just kind of wasn't actually keyed in. And then Paul, we discussed it, and you said to me, look, Dad, you know, let's give it a bash, to quote Roy and HG. Mm. Of course, delving into it, you begin to realize what a terrible, terrible sort of tragic set of and bizarre. What a bizarre family.
Yeah, if you're trying to paint a picture of some pretty intense people, I mean, so Christopher and Elizabeth Crawley, that's the couple we were talking about before, were extremely religious, and they kind of become the focal points of pretty much every story of alleged hauntings in the place. Elizabeth Crawley, just to give you because we can't show you pictures on a podcast, but she wore she wore like black all the time. She wore lace caps. She had this huge beaded collar. Staff talked about how she treated them. I know a lot of this seems pretty anecdotal, so I want to be pretty careful. And obviously this is, hundreds of years ago at this point, well, over 100 years ago. But the reputation Elizabeth Crawley had in the house was not great. Would you agree with that assessment?
100%, Paul. And I guess another problem I have with this particular story is that the husband is and was portrayed as a really lovely guy.
Right, so
and that's bullshit.
Well, yeah, because it takes two to tango, right?
But also we do know that he fathered at least two children from the maids.
Yeah.
From two separate maids.
Right.
And I can sort of I can delve into that a little bit more if you'd like.
So yes, please, but I think it's really valid that you pointed out it seems unfair that all the that even with the womanizing and the fact that, you know, historically he probably had some other problems as well, given his position of power and all the other stuff, it's interesting that all the sort of evils, even the descriptions of evil, have been kind of foisted upon Elizabeth, whereas in fact it was probably...
I agree. Yeah. And one of the things that I find problematic in this whole story, Paul, is that we have a person on the surface who's very wealthy, affluent, likable, charismatic, some might say, and was one of the founding fathers of the town.
Yeah.
Now, you know, and I guess the hypocrisy, which is a very common thread throughout humanity, particularly when you tie it in with, you know, organized religion, is that whilst he may be going to church on a Sunday, he was basically banging some of the maids.
Yeah.
But not only, you know, having relationships, you know, sexual relationships with at least two of the maids that we know about. So you can imagine sort of what we don't know about. You know, we don't know his other proclivities. And you can sort of let your mind sort of run fairly wild when it comes to that sort of thing. But he fathered... Now, one of the maids was pregnant.
Yeah.
And the from my sort of fairly extensive research, it has been gleaned that the wife... There was talk about the maid sort of becoming the heiress to the estate. And mysteriously, she fell to her death and she was pregnant, the maid. So she died with the baby. The baby passed away as well. Now, some people are saying that, you know, she was just... She fell, and others are saying that the wife pushed her.
It was a second floor balcony, wasn't it, that she fell from? Yeah, okay.
And apparently, I'm not sure whether this is right, Paul, but apparently there's blood stains still there, which sounds pretty kind of morbid.
That happened. Okay, so I read about that as well. And so this is the maid, and she was quite young, who fell from the balcony. And it was claimed that, yeah, she was pregnant. And it was also claimed that she was potentially pushed. But before that, and this is, I find this disturbing, and you've probably read about this as well, a different maid was carrying Crawley's baby daughter, Ethel. And she fell down the stairs and Ethel dropped out of the maid's arms and was killed. And the nanny claims that, I mean, I don't know how much stock to put this, but again, there were claims that she was pushed, that the child was pushed from her arms. And apparently those stairs are a kind of focal point for a lot of... But I mean, look, if I knew that all this creepy shit had happened on a specific set of stairs, I'd probably be, you know, get the Ghiblis as well. But what I'm curious about that is that they already had so many children. So they had seven kids, four girls, three boys, and that's just the kids that survived.
Well, the maid, one of the young kids, was walking out in front of the homestead and was hit by a coach, sort of a horse-drawn coach.
Yeah.
Now, the child sustained fairly serious head injuries, as you probably would. But the thing, Paul, is that this child suffered brain damage.
Hang on, is this... Oh, I know about this one. Yeah, go on. Oh, is this Harold?
Harold.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, even the name Harold's kind of... And with respect to any Harolds out there. And I think Harold's kind of a dying name.
It's gone out of style. I mean, the last Harold... Out of style. I mean, Harold Holt was the last one I could think of. And, you know.
Harold's kind of a... It's an appropriate name for the time, no doubt. But he sustained some pretty heavy brain damage. And, you know, this is another sort of... thing about people in those days and to this very day where people, some families can't cope, they don't know what to do. I mean, in those days, there certainly would not have been, I guess, a lot of help, particularly in country New South Wales, but they had the idea of chaining him up, and he remained chained up for 40 years.
Now, how much stock can we put in this? Look, I'm not saying it's not true, but... And obviously, given the era and their approach to mental health and the fact that they're in the middle of nowhere and, you know, yada, 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 all the religious stuff, it's not out of the realm of possibility for me that this was true. But if you were trying to tell a creepy story about creepy people living in the country being creepy, right, back in that era, this is one of those things that you would write and someone during the scripting process of this show would be like, that's not believable. But from all accounts that I read as well, it does seem like he was, you know, kind of at least hidden away in the house, if not chained to a radiator or something for, 40 years.
And also, Paul, I don't know whether you found this out, but And this is very, this is sort of what really rings true for me, in a sad way, but a very typical way, is that the children, the local children, would dare each other to go up and taunt him.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. No. So the kids would go up because he used to scream all day. Just, it's so terrible. And when we hear about these stories today, they make national news. They make international news. I've seen some terrible cases where they find children that have just been living in these extraordinary conditions, and then they grow and they evolve, they turn into adults, and they sort of take on, you know, the mantle of their environment. And it reminds me of that time, Paul, when I was in forensics, and we received some information that in Western Sydney, there was a child that lived in a chicken pen.
What?
Hmm. A child had been living, and the child was in his early 20s.
Okay.
When we arrived, and we went into this this house, and we went through into the backyard, and there was a chicken pen, quite a big one, with all the chickens sort of, and you know how chickens sort of, you know how they sort of scratch the
The dirt.
The dirt. Mm. And inside the pen at the back was a human being that was squatting like a chicken and pecking and basically was a chicken.
How do you... Okay, so first of all, how did you get this call? Was it like a concerned neighbour?
Concerned neighbours, yep.
And was he... You say living there. Was he not just... Was he not just like... How could... Could it have just been, you know, some immersive role play? Or how do you know he was actually...
Paul, you are so funny. God, that's so sweet of you, Paul. No, this kid was a chicken.
What I'm asking is, look, there's not... When you say living in the pen...
That's where he lived. He'd been living there all his life.
I'm saying, how do you know that?
Because you could tell he was...
What, did he have a bed in the back? Did he?
Well, he didn't have a beak.
But how do you know he wasn't just, you know, a bit weird and scratching around with the chickens?
He couldn't stand up.
Right.
He'd become a chicken.
It's not an unreasonable assumption to say, like, how did you know he was living there as opposed to just, you know, he lost it and he was back there with the chickens. Yeah. That's all I'm trying to figure out.
No, this... I think he even... I mean, he certainly didn't... Well, I didn't see him lay any eggs.
Right.
But
Maybe got nervous.
It's so terrible. It's the most terrible case. I don't know why I'm laughing.
No, I don't.
I'm laughing.
You never told me this. So what happened? What was it?
Oh, no, he was taken away and, you know.
No, I don't. I really don't. This is fairly new for me.
I know, Paul. It's just, oh, God. Maybe I just blocked it out of my... Look, there are... let's just put it this way.
Yeah.
There are some very, very well documented, cases
of chicken men
in the annals of crime about people that have basically been put out with the animals and basically, you know, grown up with animals.
But Harold, back at the Monte Cristo homestead, had sort of the inverse problem where it seems like he was locked away for 40 years. That's...
I know.
That's bananas.
But it is bananas, but also what happened ultimately is that he too was taken by the authorities and he was put in a mental asylum.
Yep.
Where he died.
Given the era, I'm not anticipating a particularly enjoyable tenure for him at that point.
Miserable. Yeah. Died miserable. But also there was a young boy. This is a terrible story, Paul. Do you know the one about the young boy that was like a farmhand?
No, no.
Oh God. Okay, I'll get ready for this.
Okay,
it's a young boy. He was in his very, very early teens. He was very unwell one day. He was really, really sick, and he couldn't get out of bed. And the foreman, you know, of the farm, because they raised horses and very successful horses. He had a very successful stable, the owner. And the farmhand, the manager, came into the boy's room and said, you know, get out of bed, you lazy so-and-so. And the young boy, he was incapable of moving and he was just lying there. So the foreman did is that he decided to get the boy out of bed by setting his bed on fire.
Oh, Jesus. Okay.
So he sets the bed on fire, and unfortunately the boy was so sick he couldn't get out of the bed and he burnt to death in the bed. Okay?
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Now, that's very, very fucked up. And it's terrible. And when you start to compound, to layer these tragic stories, one on top of the other, like a Betty Sidney cheesecake,
yeah,
or some type of cake, whether you know, layer upon layer.
Very specific, yep. Okay.
Yep. So, you know, all these terrible, terrible stories, and I just think that, you know, it begins to sort of lay the foundation for a very sad story. And also, the husband, you know, the men used to wear starched collars, Paul?
Yes.
And the sort of the patriarch, he had a bit of an infection on his neck.
This is William Crawley. So, yeah, what a weird way to go. So he gets some sort of like gross carbuncle on his neck, which gets infected because he has this starched collar.
Starch.
Yep. Sort of like rubbing against his neck. He was 69 when he died. So this is in 1910. So it's, you know, still a very long time ago. And then what you've got, I think this might be, Dad, this might be why so many of these alleged ghost stories seem to depict Elizabeth Crawley as this black-wearing kind of, you know, terror floating around the house. Because she was alive for another 23 years after he died.
Yeah.
And she went full religioso. So she turns the upstairs storage room into this chapel where she sits there reading the Bible for just countless hours.
For 23 years.
Crazy. Pretty intense, though, right?
But she only ever left the house twice.
Yeah.
In 23 years.
Yeah.
So she was in a state of mourning.
Now, I'm having trouble with the timeline. Is Harold in the house at this point? And how much of Harold being kept there against his will do you think was related to the fact that she was basically in a state of prolonged grief and isolation?
Interesting. I'm not quite sure of the timeline.
Right, 'cause she died in 33. So she died at the age of 92. And apparently she had a heart failure and a ruptured appendix. And then, Dad, this is the part that I find fascinating. There's an article from the Australian Women's Weekly in 1976 because a guy called Reg Ryan, back in 63, he buys this vandalized abandoned homestead. Okay, so he buys Crawley Estate for 1,000 AUD. Yeah? It had been sitting there vacant since 1943. And then there's this article in the Australian Women's Weekly in 76 showing off this newly kind of restored homestead. So when you said that some of the decor was a tad kind of gauche, right? I think what's happened is that's old Reg's attempt to recreate accurately.
I think they did a pretty good job.
Sure.
I mean, I sort of look at it with a slightly more critical eye.
Because an antique dealer, yeah. But what happens is so often is if people from an era are trying to recreate another era, then the trappings of the era they're in inadvertently kind of influence things. And because he was doing this in the 60s and 70s, it does have a kind of Formica-ish bent to it. You know, it's got that sort of... It's got that a little bit of that flavor, I think.
Good analogy, Paul.
So what you're seeing is a recreation of the original as opposed to... the actual original.
Correct.
But the bones of the place do have that sort of creepy vibe, you know?
Oh, definitely. And then what happened later on, Paul, is that in 1960, the year that I was born, there was a farmhand or like a caretaker. standing on the front porch.
Yeah.
And there'd been a local resident who'd watched that really freaky show, Psycho.
Oh, the Hitchcock film, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he watched it three times. I don't know whether that's important, that particular number three.
Okay.
But he watched it three times, mm-hmm. and he basically became insanely possessed. He goes up to the homestead with a loaded gun, and he shoots dead one of the caretakers on the front porch in 1960.
Unless I'm mixing up my time. Yeah, so, okay. That's interesting. So, the shooting of the caretaker happened 2 years before Reg Ryan bought and restored the home. So, at that point, oh my God, no wonder he got it cheap. I mean, you've got all the kind of intensely creepy stuff that happened back with the Crawleys. And then you've got this shooting. Now, how much of it... Because, Dad, I really struggle with the notion that violent movies and video games and books and whatever, like art, basically, can turn a completely stable person into a killer.
Well, it's funny you should say that, Paul, because I think you the starting point should be that... Well, the question should be, are they or were they actually stable prior to...
100%.
Because, you know, some people are sort of susceptible to all sorts of things, but... I was chatting with our contact, our supernatural contact, and she told us that she was there with her husband, and he's a 100% skeptic, and they were there at night time doing some research, and he was slapped in the face radically by basically, well, there was not a physical person there, and he felt the full force of a slap. So that's interesting, isn't it?
What I keep reading from these accounts is that, and again, this comes back to what you said before, Dad, a lot of these sort of very aggressive things that seem to happen sometimes when people head to the house are always typically attributed to Elizabeth Crawley, right? This kind of really intense woman, this dark figure dressed in black, carrying a cross in mourning, and basically, apparently, she just doesn't want people in the house, whereas Christopher Crawley is apparently seen as this sort of benevolent figure drifting around. It's weirdly gendered in that respect.
I
suspect it's because she was just in the house a lot longer, so locals sort of had more time to sort of... Because, I mean, if you were a kid and you were heading past the house and you saw this woman in black looking down at you, the amount of urban myth that would marinate over the years, you know, it makes sense. Yeah. It just makes sense. Mm.
And Paul, also, for the listeners' edification, the owners, I'm not sure which owners they were, but a group of owners came home one night. Every single one of their cats had been strangled.
What?
All the chickens had been choked, and someone had even reached into their cage where they kept their parrot and had basically squeezed its little neck and choked it to death. So... You know, when things like that start happening, and when the new owners, the latest owners, because the place had been deserted for a long time, and every single window in this house had been broken, and one of the very first times that they went to actually, as they were just about to move into the place, they're coming up the driveway, and the entire house had this bright white light sort of emanating from every single window, and a lot of the sort of skeptics said, oh, well, that's obviously the headlights on your car reflecting off all the windows. But as they pointed out, all the windows were gone. There were no windows for a reflection. So some pretty bizarre stuff's happened there.
So, Dad, I found something quite strange, and obviously I've not been inside the house, but I found a photo of a huge chain hanging from a wall, and apparently it's where the housekeeper chained up Harold. And there's a huge groove in the wall which... looks like someone's been trying to kind of wear it down and get out. I'm not sure how much truth there is to that. What I want to talk about very briefly is the fact that there is a great deal of kind of speculation around things, right? So you've got a chain and a wall, and then you get a ghost tour, and it's very easy for the person giving the tour to go, that's where Harold was chained up. And as you can see, whereas there is something incredibly feasible about the idea of a family back then hiding a kind of son of theirs, right? So, I mean, what do you think about that?
I think with a lot of rumor and innuendo and folklore, legend, I think a lot of these sort of stories, fables, if you like, they do tend to be grounded in truth. And I don't believe that this the modern day family with their, you know, their ghost stories, ghost tours, yes, they might sort of embellish certain, you know, bits of information. But I think the kernel of truth lies in the fact that we do know that it was a very sort of very sad, pretty fucked up family. But I think they're far from unique. I think if you delve into pretty well all country towns all over the world, you uncover extraordinary stories. And I, like I've always said, you know, during the last 2.5 years of doing this whole thing with Loose Units, Paul, the books, the podcasts, the live shows, and I've said it at many live shows, and that is that as we are talking today, you and I, we sit. I'm in Sydney. You're in Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
The fact of the matter, and this is, and I don't actually like saying the fact of the matter is, but it's a fact that as we all live and breathe today, in real time, there are terrible things happening that we don't know about yet.
That we won't find out about until, you know, much later on.
Correct. Yeah. And sometimes you don't find out about these things until the victims, the offenders, the perpetrators have actually passed away.
Yeah.
It's like they discover a mass grave. And I mean, look what happened in Canada a few months ago.
Mm.
I mean, there are...
I know.
It's just... there. I can say hand on heart that in Sydney, which has a population of 8 million people, there are people in this city, as you and I are talking right now, who are being kept in houses or dungeons or basements against their will.
That is extremely grim, but I don't doubt that it's true. I mean, this place had... I think when you add up all of the, you know, reported deaths at this place, you end up with 11 people. So 11 people have reportedly died on the property. And I mean, there's a stable boy who died after having his mattress set on fire. There's the maid who, you know, threw herself or was pushed. There's the caretaker, like you said, who was apparently shot by a kid who'd watched Psycho too many times. There was also a young boy who fell down some stairs. I mean, having said that, it is entirely possible that given the state of healthcare and the isolation of the home and the fact that it was, you know, around the turn of last century, it's entirely possible that if you have a house that big with that many people living on the grounds for that long, people are just going to die, right? I think what the one I find the most interesting is obviously it's around Crawley's alleged womanizing and the fact that, you know, if the maid was pregnant with his child and she just happened to fall off the balcony, apparently, like he's, apparently there's a stain, like a stain on the balcony, which apparently is potentially a bleach stain, which was where they tried to remove the blood. But again, all that's speculation, right? You can't go down and you probably could actually swab it and see what it was. But
I mean, I walk every Friday through a mental institution in like a mental asylum, lunatic asylum, as they used to be called, very famous one in Sydney, Callan Park. And it's a creepy place. And I'm not there at night time. And I don't think I'd go there at night time. When you and Tegan come up to Sydney, I'd love to take you there and just show you how they used to house people in the 19th century. And it's just, but that's how it was done.
But you know what I love, Dad? One of the things I really like about these locations is that, I mean, it's fun being told these stories, but what's particularly wonderful about the Monte Cristo homestead is back in 63 when Reg Ryan and his wife Olive bought the place for, like I said, $1,000. It was incredibly run down. And like you said, there's that story where there was the light pouring out of the house and it didn't have any electricity, so that didn't make sense. But they had 5 kids, which means that, can you imagine being a little kid and your parents going, Hey guys, we've got a new house. Yay, where is it? Oh, it's this creepy haunted homestead over in Junee, right? So the kids have grown up experiencing these things, you know, hearing weird footsteps or, you know, seeing a woman standing in white or feeling hands resting on their shoulders when no one's there, you know, pictures falling off the walls, all kinds of creepy stuff. I believe that some of these children are the ones who actually run these ghost tours. So what's great is, the perspective they provide is not just people who, you know, put on costumes and sort of run around. They actually grew up in the house. So the story has become generational, right? I find that so interesting.
Yes, it's fascinating, isn't it?
Did you guys ever... I mean, I know that you and Mum considered sea changers a few times. Did you ever almost buy anywhere that could potentially have had a Monte Cristo vibe to it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. We were going to buy a place on the east coast of Tasmania that was really, really interesting, really fascinating. But we were also going to buy a maze in a very, very small town in northern... You're laughing.
What? I just didn't... Paul, I don't think I knew this.
We were going to buy a proper functioning maze.
Was there a house with it? Yes. Or were we going to live in the maze? Okay.
No, that was the full package.
Oh my God.
House plus maze.
Hang on, like a big proper hedge maze?
Yeah, it was hedge made out of privet. It was magnificent. In fact, there was a time in my life, Paul, where I was actually quite obsessed. I even used to design my own mazes.
What?
Yeah, I'm serious. I wanted to grow a maze.
When was this?
It was a period I went through.
What? Hang on.
I've always been fascinated by hedge mazes.
Mazes. Right.
And I've been in some of the great mazes, Paul, and got lost
in them. What I think? I just have this image of you a la Jack Torrance freezing to death in a maze that you bought. I find that so endearing. I wonder if you can haunt a maze, because typically speaking, the haunted places seem to be places with, roofs and plumbing and doors and whatnot. But, a haunted maze would be fantastic.
I can tell you and the listeners that Christine and I were way more than 50%. We'd even interviewed and found out, we'd done our research as to what schools you were all going to go to in Tasmania.
So, you almost bought a Tasmanian maze?
Yes. I'm serious.
This is very new information.
Yeah. No, this is true. I was fascinated by mazes, and the maze that we were going to buy was made of the plant they use was called privet. Now, privet is actually illegal in New South Wales, but not in Tasmania, and it's a very, very robust, thick plant, perfect for mazes. So, in other words, you can't look through into the next sort of aisle. But if I had I'll tell you how good it was. It had a tower that had to be manned by a member of staff.
Oh, so that you could watch people go through and make sure they didn't get lost.
And help them out if they got lost.
Yeah, we've been to a few hedge mazes over in England, and they do. They have these beautiful parapets where a kind of caretaker will watch you and make sure you don't get lost.
But Paul, not only were we going to buy a maze nearby, we were going to buy a full cheese manufacturing concern.
Right.
So that's another...
Concern is what I'm feeling right
Paul,
now.
Paul, the reason we were offered this cheese business by this elderly Swiss cheesemaker... was that none of his kids were interested in it, and he was worried that the whole thing had, sort of vanish.
So this could have been a podcast where we talked about our creepy maze. So we could have been, kind of a generation of crawlies, couldn't we?
Well, what I would like to have done, knowing what I now know, is I would definitely have had scarecrows in the maze, and I may have rigged up like a flying scarecrow on some wires above. So when you're right in the thick of it, this flying thing just quickly goes over you, and you'd look up and go, "Shit!" Did I? Anyway, and you do night. Imagine night tours of a maze. I think that's pretty exciting. It's cutting edge, I think.
That'd be amazing. Look, I am really sad you didn't buy a maze and a cheese factory, but I'm also really happy that places like the Monte Cristo Homestead exist, because you can just straight up go and do a night tour there, and you can do it. I believe, unless things have changed, with some of the relatives of the people who did it up in the '60s. Mm. It's a really fascinating place. I hope I get to go there one day. I'd love to kind of check it out. If for no other reason, then I want to see this weird kind of economic triptych of haunted homestead, licorice factory, and prison. If I was going to have a bingo card of places that would bring me to a small town, that wouldn't be on them. But, here we are. It's Junee, and it's a very strange place. Well, I believe that's all the time we have for this week's episode of Loose Units, The Shadow Files. If you've been to the Monte Cristo Homestead and have any stories, hit us up on Facebook at facebook.com/loose units. If anyone knows a priest who's performed an exorcism, I'm not joking. We actually want to talk to them on the show. So please do, again, hit us up. But I think that's all the time we have for today. So we will see you later this week for Loose Ends. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.